You are now listening to the New Old Heads Podcast, premiered every Thursday at noon Eastern Standard Time at bringdowntheband.com, and brought to you by No Bad Ideas, Coleman Dental, Printfinity, Indie CD and Vinyl, and Sun King Brewery. Support the New Old Heads by visiting our Patreon at patreon.com/newoldheads.
We're now tuned in to the New Old Heads Podcast. I am Major 7th. Entire crew is here. The weather broke. I guess people been out here acting a fool off 42 to 43 degree weather here in Indianapolis. We don't condone that, though. We're going to make sure the weather get where it's supposed to be before activity happens. Somewhere in there, you know, before it gets cracking, because there's been some foolishness going on out here. My man Jay Moore is in the building. How are you, sir?
Doing well. Just, glad that it's just not super cold, but man, hanging in there. You know, it's crazy. We're already at the end of February here. You know, things are moving quickly.
Sir, I agree 100%. Rocking the fresh colorway, Mets colorway, Illmatic jersey. I hadn't seen this one before from him. I don't believe if I have, I'm just getting old. My man DJ J Diff. What's happening, man?
Salutations. What's good, good brother?
Man, I can't call it, man. Just trying to stay out the way and avoid the people that's getting hype off the weather. You know what I'm talking about?
Well, I mean, you're in the Midwest, so you know as soon as the weather break 50, yeah, you're going to see flip-flops, you're going to see shorts. Yeah. You might see some sunscreen and some people laid out.
Feel you.
So, I mean, it's just a Midwest thing, you know?
Right. I am acting brand new like I don't know that. Right.
You know it just like how you knew how to drive in the snow last week.
Facts.
You act like you were surprised that it even snowed when it's supposed to snow because you're in the Midwest. But
right, you're right.
It is what it is.
I stand corrected. You're right. I'm rounding out the squad live from the Bringing Down the Band headquarters. Man, Longevity, how are you, sir?
Doing okay. Doing quite regular today. You know,
quite regular. Did you do any random activities based off, you know, the low 40s, or everything's normal?
Went and had a meeting with Nick at Decademics today, and then I came back home.
Okay, so that's, you didn't do it. Anything different. Got
nope.
It. Okay, that's cool. That's cool.
Nothing.
Hey, man, shout out to the chat. Nothing. Not the ordinary, huh?
No.
Okay, all right. Well, shout out to the chat.
Need to bring the soundboard back.
You're a little
bring the old school soundboard back.
Oh yeah,
You're a little robot-y a little bit there, Ter.
Oh,
of course. As soon as the show starts, that's when it happens.
I had to hop out, hop back in, brother.
Yeah,
call it, man. But as we were on the show last week, Prince Marky D passed away, and from the Fat Boys, and he was at the age of 52. I'm not sure if it was due to anything that was COVID related. I'm not sure if it was.
They said he had a heart issue. It was a heart issue.
Okay, heart issue.
You know, his weight had been up and down. Like, at one point, he had lost a lot of weight.
That's what I thought. Yeah, that's what I thought.
You know, yep. But it was, you know, it was a heart issue. 52 is young, man. 52 is young.
52 is young, man. And, you know, we talked about the Fat Boys, I don't know, a few episodes back in relation to something. I cannot remember what the topic was. Legendary group, man. Iconic group, you know, and you know, it's just unfortunate that these OGs, man, in their 50s, you know, we talked about Ecstasy the same way with Houdini. Like, it's just crazy that they've lost so many of them, and they won't be able to continue to get their flowers, man, into their 70s or 80s, like some of the soul singers that we see now that are in their 70s and 80s and still getting that love, man. You want to see that for the hip-hop community as well. See the OGs age gracefully and, you know, still get love. So rest in peace to him, man, because I did not see that coming, and, you know, I was just on IG and see it come by, and I had to scroll just to double-check. Yeah, that's crazy, man. That's crazy.
Also, well, you know, I'm part of one of the first groups that was featured in movies. You know, I mean, they were in Crush Groove.
Can y'all hear me?
Yeah, I can still hear you. Terry still got that buzz again. That was still
okay. Let me go ahead, Jay Moore. I'm gonna pop out and pop back in.
Okay. You know, the thing is, like, people, I talk to people when I see these hip hop documentaries, whether it be on Netflix or, you know, whatever streaming service. And No one ever acknowledges the contributions of the Fat Boys. And I brought this up several years ago. Yeah. And I said, I'm not watching any more of these documentaries that don't acknowledge the Fat Boys. Because quite honestly, when hip hop went from being this niche thing to being in the arenas, and, you know, of course, there was still no hip hop radio at this time. Like, you got to understand, if Run DMC is one, the Fat Boys are 1A as far as making this an international thing and something that could be done in arenas. Like,
that's big, right?
People get caught up on the novelty. You know, of course, before they were the Fat Boys, they were the Disco Three. And we forget, like, these kids, they were teenagers. You know, by the time, like, they, you know, by the time Prince Marky D had done, you know, had gone into his solo career, he was only 22, 23. That means all that success they had as the Fat Boys, they were basically teenagers. You know, but we never, a lot of times we don't think of hip hop groups or even R&B groups really as being kids, like, other than maybe New Edition. Like, we always just think of them as already being adults. Even when you think about somebody like Big Daddy Kane wasn't but 18 or 19 when he was putting out the, you know, those classic records. But with the Fat Boys, you know, I wish they would have gotten more love, not just from, you know, the overall music community. I mean, they got their love because they moved units. Like, they had platinum records when rap records didn't go platinum. You know,
they definitely moved units.
And it wasn't just because it was like some novelty disco duck type shit. Like, they were good rappers and crazy performers. I know Questlove posted it. It was the first time they were on Soul Train. And you saw the energy from the crowd when they came out and they did, you know, the Jailhouse Rap joint. And then when they did the Stick'em joint, like a cappella, when, you know, and this is honestly, you know, love to Don Cornelius, rest in peace. But, you know, he wasn't really on board for the hip hop thing when it first started. Really, he wasn't on board for it much at all. But, like, he knew through the power
especially
of television
early on,
that he had to go, he had to go ahead and showcase you know, this burgeoning genre. But, you know, with the Fat Boys, man, I mean, they did some suspect stuff towards the end of their career, even though it still worked. Like, when they did the record with it was, you know, and it was what it was with the Beach Boys, and, you know, someone in their management, you know, they got a little heat for that. And then someone in their probably in their minds was like, okay, well, we don't want to be seen as sellouts, so we'll do a song with Chubby Checker. It was like, no, that wasn't really what we wanted you to do either. But, you know, like I said, especially the early records, can you feel it, or Can You Feel Me, rather, you know, Jailhouse Rap, All You Can Eat, like, these are great records. Larry Smith, once again, the legendary Larry Smith has his imprint on what they did. And honestly, without the Fat Boys, they were the first group to really successfully go multimedia. You know what I'm saying?
We mentioned Larry Smith a lot. Like, we've mentioned him in the past.
But the film Disorderlies, because, you know, Crush Groove, you know, that was a collab. That was, everybody was in that. But then they, you know, someone said, yo, let's give the Fat Boys their own movie. Is it a great movie? No, just like a lot of movies that we love aren't great movies, but they were fun to watch, and they were, you know, we loved them at the time. We still love them now. But, you know, without, you know, Disorderlies making back double its budget, we don't get House Party. You know, so they laid the groundwork for a lot of things that we love and we talk about all the time. You know,
Sorry to cut you off, bro. I can't see Terry. Can y'all see him?
I'm talking to him.
No, he's popping in and out.
It's all good.
Yeah.
Ooh, okay. So my fault.
So that's the thing. I just always want to show love to the Fat Boys. Like, it's always been a thing I've talked about, whether it be on my Twitter or any of my social media. And I, like I said, I'm not, it's still, and right now, if anybody can hear me with who has any influence, I'm not watching your hip hop documentary, especially talking about the early 80s. If you talk about Run DMC, you have to talk about the Fat Boys.
J Diff, jump in on Prince Marky D, man. Any thoughts, you know, before we get ready to go into our topics?
Yeah, hear me?
Yeah, I got you. Fine.
Okay. What I was going to say earlier is, Jay Moore touched on a few of those topics, I mean, or points as well. Fat Boys are an iconic group. They were one of the first groups, rap groups, that actually toured internationally. They were one of the first rap groups that were on the movie screen with Crush Groove. They had Disorderlies. They were in Gold Records and selling plenty of records and were very popular, were very influential. It's just one of those things. And it's weird, too, because out of all the few people that have died hip hop this past, what, few months, they all were featured on the Fresh Fest 84 tour. You had Shabadoo.
Ooh, that's tough. Shabadoo, that's tough.
Who was part of the breakdancing crew. You had Ecstasy from Houdini.
Yep.
You had Prince Marky D from the Fat Boys. So that's just a weird connection. Because, I mean, that was my introduction to hip hop. Be honest with you, I was at that concert when it was at Market Square Arena, my brother and my mom. Yeah. So I was actually able to see them perform live, which was, I didn't realize it at the time, but that was a part of hip hop history in that tour, you know what I'm saying? So definitely shout out to Prince Marky D and his family. He will be missed. And like Jay Moore said, make sure you pay your homage to that group because they paved the way and they definitely were very influential in the craft of rap.
And also, just real quick, shout out to Kool Rock Ski. He is the member of the group of the trio that's still with us. You know, we want to show that brother love. And you know what? And shout out to also Prince Marky D being one of the first, you know, Latin cats in hip hop. You know what I'm saying? Because when you hear when you hear Prince Marky D, you hear his influence on somebody like Fat Joe. Like you honestly, you really hear Prince Marky D when you listen to Fat Joe. So, you know, just shout out to that whole fan base and to all my Puerto Ricans in hip hop. That was definitely a pioneer.
He gave longevity the swag.
Yeah,
of giving everybody the swag
because they always had ladies in the video, and the ladies love the Fat Boys. So you know, gave big dudes a little bit of swag.
And they were always fresh to death, always laced sneakers, always everything. Hold on, so they definitely were fresh. Long, you got anything to say, man? Before we go to to our next topic,
you guys covered it.
Got it. Cool. All right, let's go ahead and jump into transitioning to the rundown. So I don't know if y'all have been paying attention. I don't know, maybe you have in the chat. Y'all have been paying attention in the chat, but Meek Mill has had an interesting last, I don't know what you call it, last 3 weeks, maybe to a month. He has been under fire recently because he just had I don't know if this probably was staged. I don't know if y'all saw it, but he was he had the little incident in the parking garage with the Federale, and it took that, and people were running with that, and you know, people saying Meek is a street rapper that's not gonna do anything, and then rat this and rat that, and whack 100, and all this other stuff that's going on with him. But Meek's really been under fire for some bars that he had on a joint that leaked featuring Lil Baby. And there was a Kobe line in there that really got underneath people's skin on Twitter. Even Vanessa Bryant made a comment about it saying it was in poor taste. She wasn't too familiar with his music, but, you know, and I'm paraphrasing here, but, you know, you got to know better. You got to do better than that. Her in the bar was, yeah, and if I ever lack, I'm going out with my chopper. And it said then there's a comment that says, and be another Kobe. So the song is called Kobe. Don't what's called Worry, Rip Kobe, and features Lil Baby. Chopper reference, obviously, you know, we get what that is. But Meek's been getting dragged for that reference, man, on the leak that when it came out on Instagram. How y'all feel about that, man? Like in terms of him in 100% dragged across social media, whatever you want to call it, the internet, because they are on his ass about this Bean reference. A lot of people are saying get it from a metaphorical standpoint with rap, but that shit is too soon. He just passed. Like, I'm seeing a little bit of everything in terms of the comments with him using Chopper. So, J-Div, talk to me, man. How you feel about that from a standpoint of backlash that Meek is getting? Is it justified? How do you feel?
Now, I understand it's part of bars or rapping, and it's clever to use in that manner. But in the same token, I don't think it was cool. I don't think it's something that you should cancel somebody over, because this whole cancel culture thing is going a little too far. Mm-hmm. I do think that he should have been more tactful. And from what I understand, he did talk to Vanessa in reference to that bar, and they kind of hashed it out or whatnot. Yeah. But he just should have knew better.
Okay. I can dig that. Jay Moore, jump in, man. What'd you think about it, man? And then I'll come to you to finish it up.
Well, you know, I think it's also a time is a lot more. We're living during a time that's a lot more sensitive, and information moves a lot faster, because let's just be honest, there's always been like what you consider to be shock bars, or somebody says some crazy stuff about somebody that just died. Like, let's not act like Eminem didn't say, you know, hitting trees like Sonny Bono, you know, in reference to, you know, smoking weed. But Sonny Bono died while skiing and he hit a tree. You know, KRS-One, I'm kind of glad Richard Nixon died. Like, you know, yeah. You know, on Warren G's first album, you know, somebody in the Five Footers said, you know, catch a cap like a Kennedy, you know, like. And those are just the three off the top of my head, you know. So, but we're at a time now where people are a lot more sensitive to stuff like that. And honestly, Kobe was so beloved within the culture. Like those three people I mentioned, I mean, there's a certain distance from the culture that, you know, that people have. So there's not that sensitivity to it. But Kobe was so loved within the culture that people are going to feel a certain type of way about this. And then when his widow speaks on it, then it's like, all right, well, man, you really don't have a leg to stand on about this. I know this was a song that was leaked, but
Bingo.
At the same time, but also Bingo. I also think at the same time, anytime something is leaked in this era, I really think it's a publicity play. You know, you just don't, you know, somebody just didn't steal a CD and take this one little piece of it. Like, this was something that I think was deliberate. And I think it was a bad idea for an attention grab and to dominate a media cycle real quick. You know, when Meek Mill didn't have a hit on the radio right now. So he's getting talked about on The Breakfast Club and Big Boy's Neighborhood, and people are debating whether or not. And once again, so for what we do, this is great, because we got it gives us something to talk about on a platform like this. But at the same time, like, I don't think it's really worth all the blowback he's received, especially when this man's widow had to come out and make a statement, you know. So I don't think
you realize all that clout chasing isn't worth it
a lot of times. It's mm-hmm. You know, sometimes the clout chasing is not worth it. This time it wasn't worth it.
I'm with that.
Kobe is somebody in the culture. Like, if somebody, you know, says some ill bars about somebody outside of the culture who's not particularly beloved, like the three examples I gave you, then we just move on. It's not even a story.
Yeah, Kobe, as it relates to hip hop, and, you know, like you said, with all the people that you, the references that you gave, they're never going to hit the same way in terms of being as it relates to hip hop and the culture. So I agree with you there. It's not even close. What do you think about it, man? Just the overall conversation with you know, the Kobe reference and the Chopper reference, and how he's being treated after his comments.
I think it's. I saw it and kind of just kept scrolling. It didn't seem like it was that big of a deal. To be honest, I've heard worse shit. Everybody is a little bit sensitive right now. It was in bad taste, but there's a ton of hip hop shit that's in bad taste. You know, like.
Exactly.
We'd really have to address a much larger issue of hip hop being problematic and respecting the problematic, you know. And so out of some sort of freedom of speech, creativity thing, you know, which nobody's going to want to talk about. So I don't know, man. It was just one of those things. Like, I just didn't care. I know that's my line, but it's like it didn't seem like something that was like worth getting upset over. But at the same time, I could see why Kobe's people could get upset. I could see why people that were close to Kobe, or, you know, were huge fans of his, could get upset. I think Jay Moore kind of hit it spot on. You know, it's like if it's close to you, you're going to get upset. If not, then you're going to keep it moving. I mean, Kobe was a basketball player. He was a great basketball player. It affected you guys on the show a lot more than it affected me. So, you know, that just kind of goes towards all that. You know, different people are going to take it differently. So I don't know. Maybe it's a publicity stunt, man. I don't know.
I'm sorry.
Maybe it's not. I was going to say, maybe it's a publicity stunt. I don't know, but I think to truly like put Meek Mill on trial for this, we have to have a much larger conversation.
Definitely.
Okay.
Hey, definitely.
Diff, jump in. You were going to say something.
I think the whole cancel culture is whack anyway, because you have people that come out the woodwork and are ready to cancel every and anybody for mm-hmm. something that they did, but they're in a position to where they're not held accountable for anything that they do. You know what I'm saying? Because it seems like it's always those people. Like I said, sensitivity is at an all-time high right now. People were able to get away with a lot more back in the day, and I'm not saying that it's necessarily right. In the same token, we should take it as it is, understand that maybe he made a mistake, and keep it pushing rather than trying to push the whole envelope of canceling somebody.
I don't even think cancel culture is real. I mean, number one, you can't really cancel anybody. I mean, can you guys think of anybody that's truly been canceled? Rather than, aside from that, their career has been pushed forward. You know what I mean?
No, I can't think of anyone that's 100%.
Ja Rule was canceled by 50 Cent. T.I. canceled. A Lil Flip. Those are rap battle cancels. Those aren't culture cancels to where you have a mob of people on Twitter that decide to pick on somebody and completely wipe them off.
There's one. I feel like when Chrisette Michelle decided to perform at Trump's inauguration, that was the end of her career. That was the only person I really think I really feel hurt. Like got canceled. Like
it hurt.
That's it. I stopped following her on Twitter. It's a rap. I haven't heard from her since.
You know what? I don't think I can disagree with that.
When's the last time she collaborated with anybody? When's the last time she's put music out or been interviewed?
I haven't heard from Chrisette Michelle
in 4 years.
I don't think I can disagree with that, because she got dragged. Like, she really got, like, she got dragged for that.
And the thing is, people told her, do not do this.
Louis C.K. was canceled.
So that crosses
Louis C.K. was canceled.
So then we're crossing into a different type of cancellation, right? Anything that is kind of sexually related and stuff like that, we see a much higher rate of people getting almost like the idea of calling it forced accountability as opposed to cancel culture. It's like you either have to be forced accountable at this point. You have to address it. But like Aziz has kind of come back a little bit. You know, Louis C.K.
He's had a Netflix special since then.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. Yeah, he has, hasn't he? Yeah, because he addressed it.
I don't think Aziz ever really, I don't think he ever was, he was under the microscope, but I don't think it ever actually grew the legs that it could have. The only thing that would make you think that it actually worked is he never came back with another season of his show.
Which sucks, because that was a good series. But
yeah, that was a great show.
I have a whole album based on it, so, I mean, yeah.
Good album, too.
Thank you.
Very good.
Master None. Go back and watch what's still on Netflix, because we didn't get another season, but it's still available.
Yeah. Terry Crews. Yeah. So
spearheaded what's her name's career. What's old girl that was on the show?
His friend?
Black chick from Chicago.
Oh, Lena Waithe. Yeah. Like, really, that's how people became
spearheaded her career.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know. The cancel culture thing is interesting. I don't think people really get canceled. I think it really kind of helps everybody's career. It's like there's no such thing as bad publicity unless it's like something like murder or rape or sexual assault. That's like the lines. But if it's just calling somebody something. Or
like even the country cat. Yeah. The country cat that they just got caught saying the N-word a couple weeks back. His album sales actually went up. They tried to cancel him.
Yeah.
Because the people who claim to be,
I look at it like
culture went out and started streaming his music, and that and a bunch of racists.
I think it definitely hits different when, it hits different when an immediate family member, like a spouse, says something. Like she wrote a lengthy statement on that mug, so I think that kind of added to it as well. I don't want to say poor fuel, but you know what I mean when I say that.
Right.
So with
there are bars. We're not.
With Kobe, real quick, the only difference that I see, as far as the names that Jay Moore brought up, that have been said in hip hop, is those are people that weren't people that you really fucked with, so to speak.
Yeah. Like I said, they weren't the cult.
That's what I
everybody grew up close for the most part. He's an icon.
Not even so close.
It's touching people a little different than the other people that we speak.
Yeah,
they were
this not even close from a standpoint of, you know, hip hop culture and being involved with it. Like Kobe is, you know, how the Hoopers are the popular ones are just referencing mad hip hop tracks. It's just, it goes hand in hand. So yeah, the you know, anything with Kobe is gonna hit different, especially how soon, you know, coming off him being gone just a little over a year. So yeah, Meek is had a rough few months, man. So I'd be curious to hear what he come out with.
Really rough
record.
2 or 3 weeks.
Has it been 2 or 3 weeks? Yeah, like he been in some things, man. So I'd be curious to see how he's gonna try to flip it. He might need that Drake feature,
you know,
that
what
he usually gets.
A hit song and a club banger will erase you know, all sins. If you come out with something hot for the summertime, people gonna forget all about this.
Yeah,
that's just how,
Drake,
game goes.
I will give Meek his credit. I will give Meek his credit, because at one time you would have thought that Meek was done.
Facts.
Meek rose from the ashes and pretty much came out even better. Was pretty much dragged by Drake. Then he didn't respond. Yeah. And you know what I'm saying? But he still came out from that better than he was when he went in. So
100%. Oh,
Mika surprise you at the end of the day.
Like I said,
we're gonna find out, because
the rest of the song with Lil Baby, let the rest of the song be fire. And like I said, it'll catch people exactly when they start going back outside. People forget all about this when if he got a banger on deck.
Mm-hmm. Telling y'all, that Drake feature coming, and if it's that Drake feature, all this will be slid to the side, and it's gonna work for him. So, you know, I'm curious to see how he responds when the record actually drops, and you know what singles come out for the rollout. So I'll be curious. We'll see. I'm gonna definitely keep my eye on that. Let's go ahead and jump into the next topic. I think what was the last? It was last week or maybe a week and a half ago. Sai, the Prince, was in Atlanta, and I saw his interview with the Breakfast Club. But they played audio from an interview that he had where he was talking about how were trying to run him off the road in Atlanta, and you know, he hit the brakes and tried to back up, and guys went all the way down the highway, turned around and came back, and he was driving backwards and, you know, ended up flipping his car over, and they shot the car after it flipped over. Like, so he says, you know, it was pretty much an attempt on his life. He doesn't know why. Like, he said he didn't know if it's from, you know, old street ties, or, you know, people just mad during the pandemic, or, you know, jealous, who knows. But to follow up, and speaking in terms of Atlanta, like, Lil Mike's barbershop just got hit with stray bullets. It was at a reopening for one of his locations, because his swag shop is starting to spread out throughout Atlanta. So, you know, it was, I saw a video of him and Big Boy. They were in one of the shops, and they were talking about, you know, stuff that happened, and, you know, how, thank the Lord, those dudes had bad aim, because it didn't, you know, they were able to wake up the next morning, and there was no, you know, damage will set them back a little bit in terms of opening spots. But made me think, man, because if I'm not mistaken, King Von, his situation was in Atlanta as well. And I don't know if it, maybe I'm wrong, but I posed the question and we decided to go with it. But is Atlanta becoming too dangerous to be like the hip hop capital? Because to me, Atlanta is the hip hop capital. No, New York is the originator. I get all that. And, you know, the West Coast, it is what it is. But be clear, Atlanta moves the needle, in my opinion. I think that is the capital of hip hop. It has been that way for a while. But I don't know.
But when has violence dictated what a capital of hip hop was?
When has a
I'm not sure if that is that what you're trying to say. I don't know if that was what you're trying to say.
What I'm trying to say is it becoming too dangerous? Like, when I say dangerous, you know what I mean? People are in Atlanta, everything, like, that's hip-hop related. Like, Do you think that's a good look for the city to have multiple rappers getting killed, barbershops getting shot up? That's what I'm saying. Like, is that going to cast a shadow on the city of Atlanta being the hip hop capital? That's what I'm saying. Like,
I think a lot of it personally has to do with a lot of outsiders moving down south.
Okay.
Bringing that energy to Atlanta. That's what I think. Because even when you mentioned King Vine, whoever the cat was, he got into it. If they were, neither one of them are from Atlanta, and neither one of them live in Atlanta.
Yeah.
Which is down there. Think like somebody like Killer Mike, somebody shooting up the swag shop is just,
right.
He's a beacon of hope for the city of Atlanta.
Right.
The whole country, as far as Black America is concerned, to be honest with you. So, I mean, that's sheer pure disrespect. Just to me, it seems like there's a lot of hate in people's heart. People that's actually trying to do something or make some of themselves. And unfortunately, Atlanta has a microscope on it because they do have so many rappers and artists that come from there. And one of the testaments of why that is because they support their own.
Mm-hmm.
That's why a lot of people try to move down there and be a part of that movement based on how much that they're uplifting the artists that come from there. And a lot of people are moving down there and aren't abiding by that same Southern code of courteous, staying out the way and make your moves as you should do without being on some dumb shit. So I think that has a lot to do with it, out of the outsiders moving to Atlanta.
How do you think that makes Atlanta look? Does it change anything? Is there any?
No, I honestly don't think it does.
It doesn't affect anything.
I think what J. Diff said is a lot of outsiders in Atlanta right now. If it was all, mm-hmm. if I don't feel like it's Atlanta people doing this. I think it's people. Let me take that back. It could be because, like, right now we've discussed this before. There are a lot of hungry people out here. There are a lot of people who, you know, are just doing whatever. Like the streets are feeling some type of way. The ribs are touching right now. It still doesn't make sense as far as, like, you know, shooting up, you know, a barbershop because there's no money in just random violence in that way. But I think that there are people, you know, who live off a little bit of clout, be like, yeah, I shot up that shit, you know, and they'll say mm-hmm. that to people out loud and then get arrested later on because basically mm-hmm. they confess to somebody. Like, you just like the, you know, there's some people who ran up in a Chanel store in New York. And the dude got on social media and said, I could open up a whole store right now. And of course they got him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people are doing. I mean, I think this pandemic has messed with the psyche of a lot of people. And they're just doing stupid shit. And, you know, stupid shit, unfortunately, sometimes becomes violent. And, you know, and especially in the South where there is, you know, a gun culture. You know, I mean, and I really can't talk too bad about that because I live here in Indiana and there's open carry here. And, yep. you know, they basically got rid of the requirement, or at least they're introducing legislation to get rid of the requirement for you even become licensed. You could just have a gun, mm-hmm. you know, and then yeah. I'm from Missouri to where they basically got that idea from Missouri. So I really can't say nothing about Southern gun culture when basically that culture is right here in the Midwest as well. People want to get on and they'll do stupid shit to make a name for themselves. And I think this is part of that. You know, like you said, with the King Von situation, those people weren't even from mm-hmm. Atlanta. So they don't have the same respect for the people who are from Atlanta. But at the same time, I've seen people who are from Atlanta doing things to people from Atlanta.
My point is, I'm sorry, go ahead, finish your thought.
No. And it's just that. This America's become more dangerous in the last year. Yeah. You know, yeah. whether you're looking at just, you know, unfortunately, you know, you see the level of murder here in our city of Indianapolis. When you see what happened at the Capitol on January 6th, people are willing to exert a certain level of violence to get their point across, whether it be political, yeah, whether it be about music, you know, I think there's something going on within the psyche of Americans in general that is leading us to a more violent place. And it is disturbing. And I hope we snap out of it, but I think it's going to get worse before it gets better.
Got you. Lone, jump in there, man. What are your thoughts?
You said you had a comment on that, your point.
Well, I mean, my comment is just, you know, being a person that lived in Chicago, be clear, there's a reason a lot of these artists don't move to Chicago. You hear a lot of these artists, G Herbo and all these cats talking about, I want to stay, Duck, all these people like that. I want to stay home in Chicago. I want to stay home in Chicago. And then we see things that start to happen. Like, that's what I'm, when I'm trying to talk about Atlanta, I'm just looking at it from a standpoint of, when I saw Chicago, like, there's a lot of people that say, well, I got to get out the city of Chicago. It's too dangerous. You can't blow here. You can't live here. That's what I mean when I say that, because I've seen that happen in Chicago. There's a lot of people that will not stay in Chicago because of drill music and the things that go on in the city that are from there. They feel like they can't blow there because it's so dangerous. That's what I mean when I say, how does it affect the city? Go ahead.
I wouldn't say that. Go ahead. I'll let Long go first because he needs to speak on it.
No, you can go ahead. Sorry.
What I was going to say is, for when you compare it to Atlanta compared to Chicago, the gang culture is big there.
That's true.
I believe it got worse when they start tearing down low income housing because it spreaded those sets further over the city and into other areas. You have pretty much people from the same set beefing with the same set under a different umbrella, so to speak. So I think the thing in Chicago is a little different than what's going on in Atlanta, because it's not the thing in Atlanta is not bred by gang culture.
Okay.
Me is bred more by jealousy and, like I said, people from the outside coming in trying to get it how they live or how they live back home, but trying to do that same thing in Atlanta where it's not necessarily welcome.
I guess my rebuttal would be, I feel you from a standpoint of, you know, the gang culture and all that. I get all that, especially when you're talking about the low income housing. I remember when some of those buildings was getting torn down. I'm just looking at it from a standpoint of violence on violence. Violence by any whatever means, you know, violence is still going to be violence, and it's times 10 in the city of Chicago. I get it, but you know, I'm not saying it's the same. I was just throwing it out there. But that's a good point, though. I feel what you're saying. I'm not mad at that. I'll jump in there.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I honestly don't know. I'm just kind of listening to what you guys are saying. I don't know the answer to this. And then the other question would be, getting too dangerous for who? So I know you mentioned specifically, you know, the artists and the people that are living there, you know, that are within the culture itself. But I don't know, man. I guess the Sci-Hi thing was a little crazy when he talked about it. I don't even think I even remember hearing about the Killer Mike Barbershop thing. I saw about the music video recently that was shot up and stuff like that, but none of it was like, oh wow, somebody shot up a music video. It was just like, okay, you know.
Yeah.
So I don't know, man. Hip hop culture in general has always been kind of edgy, you know, especially to depend on who we're talking about, especially if we're talking about a white demographic or a demographic that is, you know, has tried to historically shield themselves from the potential violence of I don't know, gang culture and the perception of what hip hop culture is, and the scary hip hop culture that can be to certain white folks and stuff. So I don't know. I'm trying to make it make sense in my head, but I don't know. I guess I just don't see it from my point of view as anything that's been like, wow, you know, like this is a whole bunch of stuff popping off that's gonna change. I mean, if what would it take for a my question would be to this is, what would it take for a new place to emerge as a, you know, the haven of, you know, up and coming hip hop and, you know, a thriving cultural scene of sorts to take over in Atlanta, you know? And is violence really enough to sway that elsewhere? You know, I think violence is just
that's a good question.
I think the thing with Atlanta is for those that have never been to Atlanta, rappers are not the most successful people in Atlanta. What it looks like when you go to Atlanta, when you visit Atlanta, you see a lot of black excellence is from every direction almost.
Yep.
And that in itself is an energy feeds the people that live there and is what made Atlanta one of the staples. People want to go there and get it in because they seen that unity out there. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And you have a lot of these people that's coming to the city, want to be involved in the city, and they're not eating like these people that live there already.
Exactly.
That have already got it out the mud, so to speak, are very successful, they're not playing by the same game. So they didn't come up living and seeing people that aspire to be bigger become bigger, because that's what's going on in Atlanta. You see a lot of success out there. That's why I personally think it has to be from the outside looking in, because even when you go to the spaces where the crime does happen, that's where it stays for the most part.
Yeah,
in Atlanta or Georgia, so to speak. It doesn't happen all over the place or just random type shit. It's controlled. You know what I'm saying? If something happens,
yeah,
that's what it was about. It wasn't about let's follow Saha on the highway and shoot at him on some bullshit. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Warranted street shit. Not on some randomness, so to speak.
Yeah.
Well, I think that speaks
to,
you know, with when I talked about how people's ribs are touching, and it's a situation to where, damn, like I don't even have a Dodge Challenger. And then this person got all this. Mm-hmm. Like, it makes it like, you got to understand, like, there's a lot of success in Atlanta, but there's a lot of self-esteem problems in Atlanta too. And I think that's where a lot of violence, and this is not just a word right thing.
Said a word
where,
right there.
You know, you get to feel in some type of way, you know, if somebody just has visibly more than you, you know, it may not reflect their bank account, it may not affect where they live, but that's the thing about Atlanta is, like, you see people's wealth, whether it's a thing where they actually have it or they're just wearing it, and it mm-hmm. you yeah. are somebody who's trying to get it, it can make you feel some type of way. Like I said, a lot of violence is the result of self-esteem issues, and that's not just Atlanta, that's in Indianapolis, yeah, across, in St. Louis, exactly. in Los
that's
Angeles,
across the board.
And in Brooklyn, yeah. and that's what a lot of this violence is coming yeah. from. And when you've had people who have not been eating the way they're used to be, where they used to be eating, and you know, a lot of these rappers haven't been able to tour. There's rappers out here that got stimulus checks and they don't want to tell you that, you know, they got that $75,000 that money because they didn't make $75,000 last year. You wouldn't know it because of the chains that they wear out of the house or the car that they're leasing. And mm-hmm. you know, some I've said this before, you know, when we've talked about things like this, and I'll say it and I'll just reiterate what I've already said. A lot of this violence has to do with self-esteem, and no one wants to really address the issue of low self-esteem, especially among black males under the age of 25 years old.
That's a bar. I want to jump in real quick before because we still got to shout out to partners. I know we're running a little over, but good comments in the chat. I know said Atlanta isn't the same Atlanta years ago. More transplants are there more than the natives, and they are bringing their drama with them. That's kind of what Terry was saying. David said, I think it's not good for the culture, but technically Chicago rappers is worse. That's fair. And AG said, I think he's saying the events and movement might possibly shift if the violence continues. Yep, that's where I was going with that. David said the whole drill rap scene. He said, let's see, maybe Atlanta could
be. Yeah, you clarified that, I think. You clarified that about halfway through. So, yeah.
Yeah. And then we have, LA as a whole is getting crazy, too. I believe that, Shano. And then, who am I missing?
Drama can be transferred from city to city. I mean, that's a good point.
Unfortunately, that's a good one, yeah. Desire for community. So I see you, Corey T. Self-esteem problems even amongst celebrities. Yep.
That's definitely. Good,
Corey T. Yep.
Because there are a lot of people who are famous, but they're not rich.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Definitely. Because you see him, I mean, they got paper. Then the thing with Atlanta, too, is Atlanta is not only the hub for hip-hop. Atlanta is maybe Hollywood right now. That's where they're shooting the majority of these movies and TV shows are being shot right in Atlanta. Yeah. I mean, that's the reason why, what's the name, built his studios there.
Tyler Perry got a monster studio out there. Yeah.
Monster studio out there. And
because
he knows what's going on.
And it's on plantation. And it's on, was it not plantation, it was on. What land is it?
Plantation.
No, it used to be basically a base for the Confederates for the during the Civil War.
I love that even more. Let's shout the partners out real quick. I know we ran a little bit behind, and we'll see what we can squeeze in for the last topic.
We'd like to thank our partners for the new Old Heads podcast. No Bad Ideas Clothing Company, Coleman Dental, Printfinity, Indie CD and Vinyl, Sun King Brewery, and the hub for all things new old heads, bringingdowntheband.com. Remember, once you type Bringing Down the Band in the search bar on YouTube and the page populates, subscribe and hit the bell for notifications. And as always, we thank you for your support. Now back to the show.
Yep.
All right, we shout out to the partners as always. We appreciate them. Love to continue to build and grow those relationships that we have with them. Last topic before we get out of here. This was on 18HH.com. There was a article that popped up. Shout out to Jay Diff. He shared this in our Discord, which y'all can become part of as well. It says, Kid believes rappers, and this is Kid from Kid and Play. These rappers today are alike. He says, artists used to have distinctive sounds, and they no longer have that. He said all the groups had a distinct sound. Houdini sounded like Houdini. KRS-One sounded like KRS, and Salt and Pepper sounded like Salt and Pepper. Biz Markie sounded like Biz, etc. It was very distinct. Now they all went together. That's the one thing that I point out in terms of comparing it to hip hop today. A lot of the sounds are alike. It's like one kind of wave. Still hearing monetization, if you will. That's what he said. So, you know, I feel like we've kind of touched on this from different angles. But from a mainstream standpoint, I think he's 100% right. There's always dope music, and you know, there's always stuff that you'll be able to find underground, or Spotify has enabled you to find whatever you want at this point, and you know, iTunes or whatever you want to call it. But from a mainstream standpoint, the things that you hear out when you out in the clubs, pandemic aside, I don't listen to the radio anymore, but the times that I do, you know, if I want to try to listen to the radio, it sounds like one long song or 30 to 35 minutes. And part of that is the same song getting played twice, two or three times, but records sound the same across the board. Like everything sounds the same. So I'm not mad at him when he says that. I don't think that qualifies for the entire music industry, but from a mainstream standpoint, I think he's 100% correct.
I think,
what do you think about that?
I don't know, man. I don't really agree with that. I feel like, and the reason I don't agree is because I don't feel like they're comparable in the manner that he's trying to compare them. Like back in that era, people were trying stuff out. You know, not everything had been like invented. Not all the styles were already available. Nowadays, like people are mimicking more based because they know what works, you know? And so like but at the same time, like there's probably a Houdini. There's artists out now that do their own styles that, you know, Open Mike Eagle has his own style. He's not, you know, mainstream popular, but he is doing well in what he does. But, you know, a whole bunch of underground artists and And I call them underground artists because that's just what they are. They're not mainstream for what you're saying, but the mainstream is different back then than what it is now. And I don't know, man.
Why do you say that?
Why is the mainstream different now? I mean, well, we've talked about this a million times on the show, but right now, what were the mainstream hip hop acts that were being played in the era that Kid was talking about?
Well, I don't know necessarily.
You want to talk about that era?
Yeah, but if you want to pick a good year, pick. We've talked about this. I think we've talked about it when we were talking about eras.
Jay Moore already answered the question, right? So, if no hip hop acts were mainstream, then that means we're strictly talking about underground. Okay. And so if we translate that up to where we're at now, of course, we have all the mainstream acts that sound like mainstream acts, but then we have underground acts that act that sound unique and different in their own different ways. I don't know, man. I just don't
underground, because if you was up on hip hop, it was mainstream to you. And I can attest to that because I was one of those individuals that if it was hip hop, I knew about it. Was on TV, so to me it was readily available. Now, as far as being accepted by the music industry, it's a different story. It would be classified as underground from those terms. As far as it being underground, as far as hip hop is concerned, I think it's a little different.
Yeah, and this goes into our conversation that we were having last week. Even, you know,
I mean, if you look at all the albums that came out, you know. In 1996, for example,
we've got like, at least none if of, we're talking about that, Kid and Play, we've got at least be talking
was,
about 92.
Kid and Play
90.
Was the 80s, though.
I know they were the 80s, but I'm saying
that's late 80s.
No, I get the 80s, but what I'm saying is we're talking about mainstream quote unquote diversity. If you look at all the albums that came out in 96, if you look at the picture of all those albums that came out in 96, all those joints was getting played on the radio and none of them sounded the same at all. None of them.
Well, this is the thing.
The difference between then and now, I don't think the
argument is that doesn't hold much weight, because this is the only thing that might be make everybody sound the same if to his ear, you know. And I can only go off of is it right now everybody wants a beat from the same producer, and that same producer is not particularly going to tailor a sound to said artist. And so that's what might make it sound the same to someone like Kid. But as someone who, you know, to me, Gunna does not sound like Lil Baby. Lil Baby doesn't sound like Da Baby, you know. And
I just
can't agree with that, you know, because, you know, like they do records together. So like I know they don't sound anything alike. You know, when their verses come in, it's not like I'd be like, oh, I don't know who that is. Like, unless I'm just making it a point to not pay attention. You know, when you talk about the production tip, we talked a little bit earlier about Larry Smith. The records that Larry did for the Fat Boys are not the records he did for Run DMC. The records he did for Run DMC are not the records he did for Houdini. He tailored things more towards the particular artist. That's not what you see today. Like, Mike Will made it, like, he does it a little bit. Like, the stuff he did for Kendrick might have been a little bit different for what he did compared to Ray Shremmerd, but... You know, when you talking about what's the cat from? He reps Atlanta now, but he's from St. Louis. Oh gosh, I can't. Really? Metro Boomin. You know, if you get a mm-hmm. Metro Boomin beat, you want something similar to that heat that he gave to 21 Savage. You're like, you're not asking Metro Boomin to craft you something completely different because you want to get on the radio just like 21 Savage did, and so. And also there's so many more rappers. Like, you know, at one point
now,
if you had every rap tape that came out that year, you might have 12 tapes. You know, like there are 12, 15 albums that come out every week now. So there's a different, the proliferation of artists is completely different. So, you know, there might be some that sound the same, but you know, who breaks through is, you know, it's still a real diversity of sound, at least to me. And like I said, I'm still I have what I like to listen to, and then what I listen to because I still work in clubs where we play popular music for younger people. And
well, it goes to the point, Jay, it goes to the point that we were talking about last week about, you know, the sounds that we get accustomed to when we're younger, and then when we get older, and it's the same thing. You're more accustomed to have adapted to accept the club related sounds because you're in the club all the time. You know what I mean? And so,
right. And so, like, I can tell the difference between these artists because I can tell what I like and what I know.
Yeah. And so, to me, this is just piggybacked off what we talked about last week. You know, to me, Kid sounds like he's making a generalization.
Yeah. Okay.
In my personal opinion,
that's fair.
It sounds like,
why does it say Mr. Kinetic on your name? You're not Mr. Kinetic.
Name. He is not that. Mr. Kinetic.
Shout out to Mr. Kinetic.
No, I just transformed it into kinetic.
It's like, it's not all good. Black That's people look the same.
Not for real.
I feel you, Long. I see you. I see
jam,
you.
Jam
I see
accordingly. You. Shout out to Mr. Kinetic. But now what I was going to say is I think somebody that's far removed is going to all sound the same. Now, I think he has a point to a certain extent, because when you look at rappers and cats coming up, it's almost like you got the rapper starter kit, which means pretty much dressed the same as everybody else. You don't stand out in that instance, so to speak, because everybody's buying and wearing the same shit. If it's not this, these Versace shoes or these
12-inch sole
jeans or yeah, that type of shit, then yeah, it's kind of cookie cutter as far as that's concerned. Some artists do sound the same, and it's based off of everybody isn't AR right now. So you hear a sound that's popping, then you're copying that sound, mm-hmm. versus if you were back in the day trying to get a record deal and you sounded totally different, they're telling you to copy that sound. I'm saying,
they know what works.
If you remove
That's it, Long. That's what Long said is it. They know what works.
They know what works. So a lot of people are definitely seeing what works for certain individuals, and they're kind of hopping on that bandwagon. But when you have artists and groups like Odd Future sound and do nothing like anybody else, have crews like TDE are in a whole game by themselves. We have crews like Dreamville,
which is why I love
a collection of individuals all over the South. I mean, you have artists from North Carolina, South Carolina, Atlanta. They don't sound the same. So it kind of all depends on what you're looking for and what you're listening to. If your only introduction to hip hop right now, as somebody that claimed to be hip hop, like big in the hip hop, is the radio.
Yeah.
It might all sound the same to you because it's going to follow that same vibe, so to speak. So I can agree with him on that, but it's probably because he's just so far removed.
But you know, also
the production.
Parents,
I think Jay Moore talked about
thought,
production.
Our parents thought all rap from the '80s sounded the same. There you go. We just you know, Kid is old now. And that's no diss on Kid, but removed. That's what it is. A lot of times, you're at a place.
I ain't oldest kid.
You don't live that part of the culture anymore. So it all sounds the same to you.
I ain't oldest
exactly
kid.
The same thing is you couldn't if look, Rakim, LL Cool J, and Big Daddy Kane could walk into my parents' house in 1988, and they would just assume they were getting robbed by dudes with gold chains on. They wouldn't know who they were. It didn't matter to them. All them people, they all sounded the same to them. It wasn't their music. And you got to understand, this is not kids' music.
Yo, I
understand that this is not my music, but I can still tell it just because I'm basically forced to listen to it. So I know the difference between these artists.
In the same token, too, back when he was coming up, hip hop artists, you only had a handful of them that were making it anyway. So, of course, they're all going to sound different because those are the ones that they're letting into the fold. Whereas now it's wide open, so I can make it on my own. I don't need to go through you in order to make it.
Dog, think about it, though. Think about it, though. Like, Kid 56 years old. I ain't 56 years old.
You close.
Common sense, close, give or take, you know. whatever. But I like common sense tells me I know what production. I know that production is very similar when I turn the radio on, and a lot of that stuff is cut from the same vein. Like, I don't have to be old to know that. Like, I just know when I listen to the radio, I can hear 14 songs and 12 of them are going to be in the same vibe.
But nine times out of 10, none of that shit that they play on the radio make it to your top albums of the year.
Might not. But I think that's what Kid, I think when he talks, I don't think he's talking from a standpoint of the top albums. I don't think he's talking about critically acclaimed. I think him being as old as he is like, yo, when I turn the radio on, a lot of this shit sound the same. That's how I took it. It's nothing more than that. I didn't psychoanalyze. I didn't.
Do you think it'll ever change? Do you think that it'll ever change?
That's what radio is.
Right. But that's my question. Do you think that the parameters of what we define as mainstream will ever change?
No,
I don't think so. It's always going to be driven by what works, like you said.
But whatever works. I don't necessarily mean the radio or the club. I mean, that's what I mean. Do you think the radio potentially will go away or the club will potentially go away? Yeah. And then if that potentially happens, does that open up a potential for a revolution of sorts of experimentation to be in the forefront? Can something happen?
Whatever people deem to be popular is going to be that way regardless.
Mm-hmm.
9 times out of 10, if it's easily digestible and attainable, that's what's going to be the most popular thing. If you think about it, look what what's my guy's Town Road? Simple ass song.
Oh, Lil Nas X.
Lil Nas X. It caught the attention of kids.
Yep.
Kids boosted that song to where it got played all over the place, and the older people followed as well.
Out of Billy Ray.
I mean, not the kids. The kids are what moved the culture. Period.
Yeah, which is so interesting.
If they like it, then that's what it's going to be.
Oh, stupid! I saw that expression on your face.
I mean, but it's true. It's like the entire genre or the entire mainstream music industry is driven by kids because it's. I mean, and women, but you know, kids, and it's just, it's so interesting. Yeah, I agree, Jay. I don't mm-hmm. think it's ever going to change either. But I think it would be interesting if something would happen to where, you know, we're never going to see a time where, it's like an even playing field. I don't think.
No, I mean, and. Terry brought up something that was very like what winds up on people's top 10 list of the year a lot of times does not line up with what were the top 10 most played songs on the radio. And like I said in previous shows, that's the great thing about this era. You are not forced to have to listen to whatever 15 songs you had played on the radio and the songs wherever there are videos being played that are being played. Like, you have access to everything that you like right here and right now, as long as you have a cellular connection and you can look up your favorite artists or you could discover new artists through YouTube, through Tidal, through Spotify, and your algorithm will bring you to the things that it thinks that you like to listen to. And if you don't like Megan or Cardi or DaBaby, you are not forced to listen to them. Like,
I don't.
At one point, you were.
I don't.
But at one point, you were basically, at one point, say in 1995.
And thumbs down.
You basically, if you turned on the TV or the radio, there were only a few other outlets, maybe college radio. Maybe if you had a community station like we had, KDHX in St. Louis, to where they would play other records, you know. But now, like, I know a lot of people who don't. I pretty much only turn on the radio to listen to sports talk. And NPR. When I want to listen to music, I put my aux, run the Bluetooth or the aux cord through the radio. Like, I don't listen to music on the radio. There's no point.
I think if anything were to potentially happen, and I'm thinking in very technical terms here, if there was something that happened to where there was some sort of gauge to where artists now started creating specifically for kids. and it was measured that way, as a, and you could monetize in the same way that you could for mainstream artists, but it was like separated somehow. Like I know this is, I'm kind of speaking in generalizations. I feel like in that, if something like that happened, to where artists could separate the two, then maybe we could get to something like that. But it's crazy just how much, you know, the focused on the lowest common denominator just rules the entire industry, and most industries actually. So, but
100%, I agree with you 100% on that. It'd be interesting. I'd like, but like Jay Moore said earlier, you know, we pretty much all come to consensus. Luck with that shit. All right, let's get out of here. I know we ran over just a tad bit, but we got everything in. Appreciate the support. Shout out to everybody in the chat. We see y'all comments. We thank y'all for rocking with us and staying on this late. Stick around for the post show a little bit. Talk a little more, a little shit with us if you want. We'll be up for a little while. And make sure you check us out on Patreon also. Join, subscribe on Twitch, and, you know, bring somebody back with you next week when we rock. We will see y'all next week. Peace.
Yep.